Hello and welcome to Club Kingsnake. Today we have Dave Dunlop, who's here to talk to us about some of the music he's been producing here of late. He's not only a musician, he's a songwriter and a producer and engineer, and he's teamed up with Rick Emmett, the former frontman for Triumph, and they've released an album called The Strung Out Troubadours. How are you today, Dave?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Pretty good. Are you up in Toronto?
I'm in Toronto, yeah.
How's the weather up there?
It's getting cold. It's getting cold, and the back of my house is wide open because I'm doing reno, so it's extra cold in my house.
That can't be fun in the middle of winter in the middle of Canada.
Not good, but it's got to be done, so that's the way it goes, you know?
Well, I hear you've been keeping warm playing music with Rick Emmett.
I have, yeah. We've been busy. We've been really busy, actually. We had a great November. Did a lot of shows down around Chicago and Philadelphia, and, you know, it's going great. Selling a lot of CDs, so it's all good, man.
I know that our writer, Clint Gilders, up in the Toronto area, caught you and Rick when you played up there. Did you ever get your guitar issue resolved?
You know what? I'm taking my guitar to my guitar tech right after this interview, actually. So yeah, I'm gonna, you know, hopefully, I'm sure he'll be able to fix it. He's a good guy, but still not sure as to what the problem is. But yeah, that was some fun there in Millbrook for the first 10 or 15 minutes when it wasn't working, I'll tell you. Fortunately, we had Rick's backup guitar, and you know, we pulled the gig off okay. But yeah, it was a bit scary at first.
I know that technical difficulties seem to be dogging all the performers a cover of late. I had a guy break a bass string on me at the last show, and of course nobody carries extra bass string.
No, and it's no fun for the player when they're one string short, for sure, you know. In fact, Rick broke on our gig that we were just talking about, right after my guitar fell apart on me, Rick broke a string, and he was playing we were playing a pretty complex piece, and so he had to finish the piece without a very important string in that piece that he uses constantly. So yeah, it's tough. I mean, he pulled it off, but it can be tough, you know.
I know you've been doing a lot of stuff on your own up there, and you started a band called Insulin at one point.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
You were in another band that almost got a big major release album out there and just didn't quite get there.
Yeah, it was a band called The Full Nine, and we signed a pretty big deal with Mammoth Records, which was a Disney label, and a pretty big deal. And just when the record was about to be released internationally, the world kind of fell apart with 9/11, and so it got delayed for a while. And then ultimately, Disney needed to sort of shave some of their budget. So what they did, they axed the label. So we did get released in Canada, and we did very well in Canada. Actually, the song charted in the top 10. And then, you know, after that, once Mammoth sort of folded, you know, we sort of became independent again, and that's sort of where we stand now. Singer and I still write. And I posted a song actually up on my MySpace that we wrote. It's not really active, but it's still out there.
You've been playing rock guitar for a while, and you played country guitar for a while. You played a lot of different styles.
Yeah, I kind of spent the 90s as a sideman sort of thing, and, you know, whatever gig I could get, right? And so I spent a lot of years in the country circuit, which is just, it's great for your chops. Anyone will tell you who's played in the country scene, man, that guitar playing, it's great for your chops. It's just really technical, and it's good feel. And so yeah, I did that, and, you know, a lot of sessions. I was a session guy for a lot of years, and in the last few years I've been actually writing some sort of jingles, you know, commercials.
You did a Budweiser jingle, didn't you?
I did this American sort of radio campaign, I guess, last summer. But, you know, it's some of the stuff you got to do to maintain. If you're just going to be a musician full time, you got to have your hands in a lot of cookie jars, you know. It's just the way it is. So
it's tough out there to earn a living as a musician. We talked before we turned the mics on about technology basically expanding the number of musicians that can reach people, and now there's almost as many musicians as there are people listening to music.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, you know. I mean, and it seems like everybody these days seems to have their own little studio because it's so easy. It's just software and a computer. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's what you do with it and what you can do with it, you know. And when I put my studio together a couple years ago, it's the best thing I did because I started getting work as a producer, and then next thing you know, Rick and I are doing a record in my studio, and that's sort of where we stand now.
How did that happen? How did you end up hooking up with Rick Emmett?
Actually, in 96, his keyboard player couldn't do a gig, and he needed a sub, and we had just finished jamming at this workshop. I was on the faculty, and he was doing a clinic, and we jammed, and it went well. You know, it was cool. We seemed to click, and so he thought of me, I guess, when he needed a sub. And I've been sort of in his band ever since. I guess it's 10 years now. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, well, we always used to do one acoustic piece in the middle of his show. Because, you know, Rick, he's he's always got an acoustic piece on every record, even the old Triumph.
Right.
And so we always did an acoustic piece. And so a few years ago, we started doing these acoustic duo gigs, which just sort of spawned into this, hey, let's do a record. I mean, it always goes over well live when we do a piece together, you know. And so, yeah, that's what it came out of. Let's do a duo record. And so that's what we did, man. Why not record it? You know, why not record the duo thing? So The record, although it's just the two of us, there are a few tunes where I kind of, you know, added a lot of other stuff, sort of like pianos and dobros and even drum loops on a couple of things, just to sort of, you know, round it out. And so some of the songs we can do with the band, or we just, like, we do our duo gigs. So we can kind of do it both ways, you know.
Did you do a lot of the production work on this particular
album? Yeah, I pretty much did. I pretty much, other than, you know, obviously Rick played his guitar parts, and then I kind of just sort of filled it out and played everything else, the pianos and the dobros, and did a lot of the production work. When some of my guitar parts, he would sort of be the producer for that, you know. I'd send him something I record, and he'd be, oh, that's good, but here, try this, and then I'd sort of produce his parts, and then I sort of rounded out the record by doing the production on the rest of the stuff. So,
do you prefer playing this lighter acoustic stuff to the heavier rock stuff, or the country and western stuff, or do you just like it all?
To be honest, in terms of country, I'm not a huge fan of that idiom of music. I like the guitar playing; it's fun and challenging. Other than that, I'm not really into too much. I'm a rock guy at heart. I mean, that's what I grew up listening to. But man, I love the acoustic stuff too. It's challenging when you go into a 500 seat soft seater theater and you can hear a pin drop and you got to play challenging stuff. It's great. Like, there's nothing more challenging than that. So I love it all. You know, to be honest.
What's next on your list of things to do? Are you producing anything for anybody else, or are you doing anything else for yourself?
I've been doing some work with a kid named Matthew Genovese, who's sort of 17 years old, up and coming guitar player, singer-songwriter guy. So I've been writing a little bit with him and recording a little bit with him. He's just finishing up a record with Tommy Sims, who's out of Nashville. And so I do some stuff with him. Rick and I are doing a gig next week at Hughes Room on the 13th. Hughes Room is in Toronto here. And I'm gonna record the gig, and I'm hoping to put it together and put a live sort of Rick Emmett, Dave Dunlop album out in the new year from this gig. Hopefully we'll capture that gig, and that'll be the next thing, I think.
Had you ever seen Rick perform with Triumph back in the day?
My first two shows when I was about 13 were Triumph and Rush. And I saw Triumph on the Just the Game tour in Brandon, Manitoba, which is sort of an hour or two outside of Winnipeg, Manitoba. I used to live there. And I was actually, I think, my second show. Yep, I remember it well.
I saw Triumph, I think, in 1978.
Yeah, that's the same year, I think.
I got front row. And
Where did you see them?
Oh, they were in Austin, Texas here.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately didn't pay too much attention to the commercials on TV and noticed that they had these 20-foot tall flame pots that went off.
Uh-huh.
And me and my buddies were all standing up on our seats at the edge of the stage. And
you got roasted.
The next thing we know, we're seven rows back on our backs. It took me about a month to grow my eyebrows back. So
yeah.
It looked kind of funny.
You know what? We did a gig, a Rick Emmett band gig in Germany this summer, and they had the whole deal. They had the flash pots going and everything. And they told us at what points they were going to let the flash pots go. And one of them went off at the wrong time, and I was a little too close to it. And I got a little bit of debris right in the corner of my eye from one of the flash pots because I was standing too close. So I know what you mean. And they're hot, man.
They are.
You know, James Hetfield a few years ago got badly burned from one of those in Montreal, actually. I don't know if you remember that.
They've got a concussion to them, too. I mean, when they go off, there's a big whoomph, and you can feel it as it...
Oh, it's crazy. So, yeah, I know all about those things.
Well, how much more touring have you and Rick got to go on this current trip?
We just wrapped up a lot of shows, and then we're other than the Hughes Room gig in Toronto next week, we've got actually a lot of stuff is starting to come in for the new year, more American stuff and Canadian stuff. So the calendar's kind of just starting to... We're doing a gig actually in San Antonio, a band gig.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, February 10th, and which would be great. You know, we'll do a lot of the old Triumph stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I think him and I are in Houston the night before doing the duo thing. So that's February. There's some stuff.
No, Austin. We're such a music town.
I know. I think he's the manager's working on an Austin date to hopefully put right around that thing. So stay tuned. In fact, yeah, the 11th I've got penciled in, possibly Austin.
Okay.
Just not confirmed yet.
Good.
And then a few other things coming too, some Canadian stuff, but that's the American stuff I've got in the books right now.
Well, cool. You guys sound like you're pretty busy out there. I've been a longtime fan of Rick, and, you know, obviously being a fan of Rick and checking out his latest work, I've gotten introduced to your work, and your work's pretty neat too. I hope to get to hear and see a lot more from you. I'm hoping I get to see you down here in Texas. I hope you make it as far as Austin.
Hope so, yeah.
I know that Triumph has had a long-term hardcore following here in town. They always drew a good crowd.
Yeah, well, we've played San Antonio a few times, and it's always been amazing in that area. And I'm hoping, you know, on the 9th in Houston, I'm sure it'll be great. Just because, yeah, he's always had a great following in that part of the country, you know.
I think Canadian rock and roll in general, for some reason, starting with Rush and then Triumph, really took a hold in the mid-70s down here and really created a power base that you guys could expand from. And
yeah.
I think really that was the power base that Rush built here in Texas, really helped them break into the American market as well as they did.
Yeah,
because, you know, back in the 70s, San Antonio was the penultimate hard rock town. And if you didn't play San Antonio, you weren't a major act.
Yeah.
The first place I ever saw Rush was in San Antonio. You know, we'd make the big 3-hour journey down to San Antonio to see a band at the Hemisphere Arena or something. And
yeah,
it was pretty wild back then to see somebody like that.
Well, even now, I mean, even a few years ago, there was a place in San Antonio called the Sunken Garden.
Yeah.
And we went down a few years ago, and there was like 5,000 people. I couldn't believe it. So, you know, he's still got pretty good following in that area. I'm surprised we haven't been there, you know, lately, but we are coming back, so we'll see.
Well, Dave, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. I look forward to seeing you guys when you make it here. If you don't make it to Austin, maybe I'll find a way to get down to San Antonio, make one of those old-fashioned rock and roll road trips.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
Well, you have a good night.
Okay, you too.
Thank you for talking with us here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And for Club Kingsnake, this is Jeff Berenger. I want to thank everybody for listening with us. We're going to have Rick Emmett on later on in the show, and we'll go from there. Everybody have a good day.